I'm a little darker than you, so maybe
we're okay with that.
Because you just naturally glow.
Like a pregnant woman.
I was going to say more like a vampire from Twilight.
Well, a little of column A, a little of column B. I don't have ADD or ADHD. I just have tendencies of both.
Is that what your mom says?
That's what my psychiatrist said one time.
Are we ready? Ready?
Yes.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
I wanted to take my sweatshirt off. It's too late.
No, you can take it off. We haven't even started yet.
Oh, okay.
Are you going to reveal some funny shirt underneath it again?
Shit show. Supervisor. Oh, no. It's not going to be a funny one.
Hopefully, it's all pixelated right now, just in case we don't get to catch any skin. Don't show any extra skin that we don't need to, Kavi. Except for the Patreon version.
That one.
Full skin. We do these podcasts nude.
It just edits, like, David Hasselhoff's body onto me.
Yeah, make us both very ripped.
I get a body double for the Patreon version of the episode.
I'll do my intro again, just so you have something to go from. Or do you want to just take it?
Well, I'll just take it.
Okay.
I'm curious as to where Cubby's going to put any of that, so. Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I started off pretty loud. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about Lorwyn in CEDH. The new Lorwyn, the Magic the Gathering set, which is what it's called, I'm sure, is out, or it will be out soon. Is it release weekend right now?
Lorwyn Eclipsed, which Lorwyn is extra eclipsed. Funny that we brought up Twilight in the intro, because this is also
because
eclipsed.
We are good content creators.
Yeah, making connections.
We are going to talk about all the cards from Lorwyn that we think will be good in CEDH, competitive Elder Dragon Highlander, competitive commander.
Yep, and if you don't know what commander is, it's the singleton format.
There is, as always, probably 2 to 3 very good cards in the format, and then a whole bunch of maybes that we're going to talk about. In any particular order, or how have we got it?
Dude, I'm going honest. With creatures in alphabetical order Love to it. Start, and then one instant, one sorcery, and 2 artifacts.
Great. Yeah, honorable mentions. Should we just run through some honorable mentions? I threw these cards on last minute. I don't know that any of them are actually good. I just wanted to talk about them quick.
Disruptor of Currents is 3 and 2 blue for a creature Murphy Wizard that's a 3/3 with flash and convoke, and when it enters, you return up to 1 other target non-land permanent to its owner's hand.
Convoke is kind of crazy, because if you have 5 creatures and 2 of them are blue, this can be a free creature that bounces something else, which can be good for Gaia's Cradle. It's an almost free interaction piece. It has flash, right?
Yes.
Maybe that's good. I don't think so.
Glenelendra's Answer is 2 and 2 blue for an instant that can't be countered. You can counter all spells your opponents control and counter all abilities your opponents control and create a 1/1 blue and black fairy creature token with flying for each spell and ability countered this way.
This is 4 mana. This can't be good. This can't be good. It's 4 mana interaction. The effect is insane. That's it.
Great.
That's it.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time. If you get to resolve it, it'll probably feel really good, but you had to leave up 4 mana, and what if they don't do anything good and you left a 4 mana for nothing?
The last 4 mana counter that we talked about on the show didn't end up seeing play yet,
right.
So.
I'm sure this one won't either.
Kinsir Sentry is 1 and a white for a 2/2 creature Kithkin Soldier with first strike and lifelink, and whenever this creature attacks, you may put a creature card with mana value X or less from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking, where X is the number of attacking creatures you control.
If Winota is still seeing play, I think this is a card that goes in Winota.
This is the best card we've talked about so far today.
So far. If you're a bunch of creatures and you're attacking with a lot, this will help you put in more creatures that are attacking. That's good.
And our last honorable mention real quick, Kirill Attentive First Year. This is 1 and a hybrid Boros and another hybrid Boros for a legendary vampire cleric that's a 3/3 that says tap 2 untapped creatures you control to copy target triggered ability you control, and you may choose new targets for the copy, but you can only activate it once each turn.
I think this is a Rocco card. By the time Rocco is in play, this and Rocco will be the 2 creatures that you need to tap to double whatever Rocco is getting. I'm sure there are a variety of ways that Rocco can win from 2 searches, or even protected wins by finding Grand Abolisher and another thing that lets you reuse or whatever if you have enough mana. I think this might be a Rocco card.
Yeah, like a Rocco X equals 4, and this lets you find Grand Abolisher and your Rector of some kind.
Yes.
Or if you want to do X equals 5, you can find like Kiki Jiki and
Zealous Conscripts.
One of the other many 3 mana things that combo with Kiki Jiki.
I'm sure Rocco Pilots will find cheaper ways to do this and win the game. I don't know if this is going to go in that deck, but I just thought it was like neat that in that deck and maybe some other decks that I'm not thinking of, the effect is kind of powerful. It's no mana to copy a triggered ability. Like, that's pretty good.
New best card of the day.
So far, I think it's the best one.
And then do you want to talk about this white card?
No. I don't know. No, we don't have to talk about the white card.
All right, great. Let's move on. Not even gonna
let's talk about good CDH cards from now on, or at least maybe a little bit better than the honorable mentions. Those are our honorable mentions, and then these are a little bit better than that.
They're good enough to rate.
Some of them will be really good. Some of them will not.
These are worth rating.
Yeah.
Should we talk about what our rating system is going to be for these cards?
Yeah, to be honest, personally, I like rating them all against each other. This one's better than that, but I think that's a lot of work on the back end to keep track of that. Yeah, let's just do the rating. 1 out of 5.
That sounds good. Yeah.
5 out of 5 is this is a staple. It's going in every single deck. It goes in all of the CDH decks. It's a Mox Diamond. It's a Soul Ring. It goes in all of the decks.
Yes.
4 out of 5 is this is going in a lot of decks. This is going in a good chunk of, not a lot, but like a couple of CDH decks. This will go in a few decks. This is a good option.
It's like an archetype staple, right. I would say.
Yeah. A 3 is this is kind of specific. This goes in either a bunch of niche decks or like one very specific deck.
Can I make a request?
Oh, please.
Can we move the this card goes in one specific deck tier down to 2?
Down to 2.
We end up giving things 3s that seem really high for like
because it's a Magda card.
Pretty bad cards in general. Yeah, yeah. But it's just like a Magda card and it's like getting rated close to what like Cabbage Merchant ends up getting rated.
I will agree to you that the rating system is extremely flawed.
But maybe that's the magic of it. I brought this up, but I don't have a fix.
Because realistically, like the cards that are only good in Magda and are terrible everywhere else, how do you rate them? Like, because realistically, it's a terrible card. But in Magda,
it will see play.
In Magda, it's a 4 out of 5. So it's really not a good system. I can agree with that, that if it goes in only one deck and it's a specific thing, that's like a 2. But realistically, like, does that mean like Basalt Monolith is a 2 because it only goes in Kinnan?
No, because it also goes in Lannis and Urza, like other decks that are trying to combo with that.
Sure,
so I think Basalt Monolith is closer to a 3.
Okay, maybe bad.
But like an artifact dwarf.
Is a 2. Okay,
yeah,
all
I think something
so
like that.
So 5 goes in every single CDH deck. 4 goes in a couple of good CDH decks. 3 goes in...
A couple of bad CDH decks.
A couple of bad CDH decks?
But you'll still see
Time. And then a 2 goes in... See, I'm going to... Because I...
It could go in one really good deck,
if it goes
though.
In one really good deck, I would still rate that card higher than a medium card that's going to be your 105th card of all commanders.
Here's the problem, is I feel like I'm being held down by defining what all of these actually mean, and I really just want to give them a rating based on what they are.
Let's just do gut. Yeah.
Great.
So we're not even going to say what 2 or 1 is? Because I'm already here. Because
they're bad, right? Yeah, they're
not
bad.
They're not good, yeah.
Hopefully we don't talk about a 2 or a 1, because they should have been in the honorable mentions.
We've already spent too much time not talking about good cards. Let's talk about cards.
All right. Our first card is Abigail Eloquent First Year, which is actually a Strixhaven card, but we're talking about her now.
It's in this set, though. This card
is in this set. Yeah, but there's
this
like
characters from Strixhaven.
Yeah, there's certain Strixhaven characters that come from. I watched a Chips and Guac video to be prepared about the lore for this one.
Thank you for doing your research.
Oh, you're welcome. It was 12 minutes. It was great. So Abigail is 2 Orzhov hybrid mana, and you get a legendary bird bard that's a 1/1 with flying, first strike, and lifelink. And when Abigail enters, up to 1 other target creature loses all abilities, but they end up getting a flying counter, a first strike counter, and a lifelink counter.
I think this might be a Sisse card. I say that a lot, but this is a 2-mana legend that provides 2 colors for Sisse. That's good. And it's also removal on a stick. That's good. The only thing that I care about getting rid of is like things for their ability. I would love to get rid of an opposition agent's ability. It can be there and be a 3/2 with all of these keywords. I don't care about that. I just want to search my library. It does the same thing that removal would do. It sticks around and adds to your Sisse colors, so I think that might be something. The issue is 2-mana sorcery speed, or it's a tutor target, and realistically, like, if I can tutor my library already, I'm probably good to win anyway. Obviously, that's not the case always. There are some still things that can stop Sisse, even though you can already search your library, but I don't know. I think this card is kind of something.
If you're looking for a way to stop opposition agent, I think this is better than Urtai, but I think, like, what Urtai does in Sisse is something a little bit different, where, like, it enables you to stop Thassa's Oracle and interact with other win conditions, whereas this is something that's trying to find you a win condition. Whereas instead of like actually being interaction, this is a removal creature.
Realistically, I don't play Urtai anymore, kind of for that reason of like, I don't want to use Sisse activations to stop the table. I have free interaction in my hand. I want to use that stuff to stop the table if I need to. But realistically, I want Sisse to just be winning the game, right? I want the game button. That's what I want it to do.
So you never want to be searching for this. You always want to be spending white, black, or black, white, or
whatever.
White or black mana on it.
To cast it, and that's also kind of nice too, that it's a little bit more flexible to cast, but the fact that it does that, and then it also just adds to Sisse's colors right away, I think that might make it relevant. I think that might make it worth it. I also want to say, I think there will be a better Taim card that we're going to talk about, but this card is a black and white card that adds 3 counters to something, just when it enters. In Taim, I think that you can make that part of a loop by putting counters on your own thing and removing them with Taim.
Yeah, because it's any creature you can put the counters on.
So I think Taim can use it as part of their loop as well as it can be be a removal piece for time if you need to get rid of something else.
That other creature will still lose all abilities.
Yeah.
So as long as it's like something that you don't really care about.
I wonder how it works where like if with Tayum, they lose their abilities regardless of the counters, separate from the counters.
It loses all abilities.
So yeah.
Period.
I don't know if that matters for Tayum. They might also have to have a sack outlet out and that might be too much. I don't know. I bring up Tayum every time a card says three counters now at this point. Realistically, I'm thinking about this one for Sisse. I think it might be something for Sisse.
Could be two decks. Yeah, it's a three.
Would you ever play this in something else? Would you ever want this effect in, think, a blue farm or any, like, another just, like, a mid-range deck as, like, commander removal, kind of, right? Except for if they get rid of this thing, yeah. The commander still has no abilities.
A non-blue Timna deck is a little bit more interested in this. Like, yeah. I feel like a Mardu Timna deck.
Would Mardu Tick want this? Like,
I could see that.
And Sisse, I would love to shut off a Kinnan with this. That
you're also given, like, one of their creatures flying first strike and lifelink when you're never going to get through their first strike flying blocker now.
Right, yeah.
With your Timna creatures.
Right. That also might be like when you're like, I'm just ready to win the game, so I want to shut off your thing, and then who cares? I don't want to get through Timna anymore.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you're trying to do in your Mardu deck, because some of them are trying to use creatures to go mid-rangey, and other than, I feel like are trying to turbo out a little
bit. It might be too slow and clunky for other decks, but for Sisse, I don't know. I think it's an option.
The legendary part is what is good.
Yeah,
I'm going to give this card a three.
I think a three sounds great, but since I'm the Sisse pilot, 3.1 for me.
Boom. I love that. I love that for you. Let's move on to Ashlyn the Limitless. This is two and a red for a 2/3 legendary elemental sorcerer that gives all elemental spells that you cast from your hand evoke 4, which is pretty nuts. And whenever you sacrifice a non-token elemental, you create a token that's a copy of it, and that token gains haste until end of turn, and you sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step unless you pay Wooburg.
Lumra is an elemental.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, you built this deck for the channel.
I did, yeah. Under the guise that I would be able to Lumra my whole deck for 4 mana, essentially. Yeah. So the way that it works with Ashlyn is that you would spend 4 mana to evoke Lumra. You get 1 Lumra trigger, bring back whatever lands you want. And then when you sacrifice Lumra, you create a token copy of Lumra that gives you another enter the battlefield trigger to give you a second Lumra. And if you have other Lumra pieces in play, like let's say you have an Amulet of Vigor in play and maybe like a way to sacrifice your lands, then that means that if you have Memorial to Folly, you can essentially loop through your whole deck if you can make enough mana once, essentially.
Right, because the Memorial to Folly will get the Lumra back, because this card itself, it can't make a token copy of a token. It only makes a token copy of the creature.
So when you sacrifice a non-token elemental,
so you have to use this Memorial to Folly land to get the Lumra back to your hand.
And it has to go to my hand. I can't put it anywhere else. Right. It has to go to hand specifically.
Yeah, and then since hopefully the Lumra lands that you've brought in along with Amulet of Vigor can make 6 mana again for you to recast Lumra and then do this again.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be 8 mana I need. But Memorial to Folly sacrifices itself as part of the cost. That's the 8th mana is the Memorial to Folly. It's really 7 mana, but I need Memorial to Folly. And Memorial to Folly sacrifices and will always bring itself back. You don't necessarily need a lot of lands to go off in the first place if you have the sacrifice outlet, because you'll get 2 Lumra triggers as well, which will let you use the lands for mana if you have the untapper already. Sacrifice them to the second Lumra trigger and they'll come back right away. So like you can go off from a smaller amount of mana if you already have the pieces.
If you're set up.
It's just like a lot of pieces to come together. Yeah. When I was playtesting, a lot of what was happening was I would get Lumra out, I would do 2 Lumra triggers, and I would go, well, I have Intuition in my hand and enough mana to cast Intuition.
That just feeds Breach and we're good to go from here.
Yeah, all of a sudden now my graveyard's full and I can just Breach and go for a win and do that.
That kind of makes sense though. That's kind of nice that you have kind of 2 options, and if you don't find the Memorial to Folly or whatever, you also have any way to go to a Breach line once you've got your little chain going.
That was the other thing. So yeah, if I want to like actually go infinite, I need the Memorial to Folly. I can still go for lines if I don't have that card.
All you need is like a Demonic Tutor or some sort of tutor, and then if you mill yourself enough, make enough mana, you just tutor for Breach and you can go for a win there.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's cool.
That's what it is. It's cool.
It's cool up here in your head.
Yeah, it was born out of the fact that there was not enough commanders from the new set
to actually do a game.
So we had to come up with something. Yeah. But like this was at least something you could do. And if I was building the deck now, knowing what I know about it now, I think I would try to make the mana base a little bit better.
5 color is, it's a cost. It is a cost to be 5
color. It's hard, yeah. And like the Wandering Minstrel does it, but that's because the Wandering Minstrel already says on the commander, the lands come into play untapped. So like my version of the deck can't play bounce lands. Right. I can't play surveil lands. Well, I can play one probably, but it was hard for me to determine like how many tech lands, how many Lumra lands can I actually play versus like how much does it actually matter that I have my colors of mana? And I leaned more towards I need my colors of mana.
Yeah, I feel like realistically in the landscape of CDH, this deck would would probably compete with what the wandering minstrel is doing. They're both kind of doing a similar thing of like lands, Lumras, your hidden commander strategy. I got to assume wandering minstrel is going to be a little bit better than what this card does.
I would think so.
It's a cool idea. It's a cool thought. And there are other elementals that kind of are fun besides just Lumra that you can do things.
Which, if I was building this deck more seriously, I don't think I would have included them.
You just play more tutors for Lumra or something.
Yeah, you just need like too many things to try to get the Lumra stuff going. But like, I found Green Warden of Marasa was great.
That was good.
It was 4 mana, get the 3 cards from your graveyard back that you need right away. Maelstrom Wanderer was fun. That's I don't know if it was good.
Yeah. 4 mana Cascade is good.
That's still good, yeah. The second one that you get does not Cascade because it's only on cast, but you still give everything haste, which is fun.
It was weirdly relevant a couple times where you were able to crack someone for like 13. At least I'm doing this.
Then it wouldn't be the game, but it did something.
It made you feel like you were in the game.
And what was the other one that I played? It didn't come up.
I
played the one that Kinnan plays, the one that triples your mana.
Oh, triples makes it safe.
4 mana for it instead means that it's essentially 4 mana ramp you to
infinity.
9 mana?
Infinity.
And I never did it, so I still don't know how it works.
We've already spent too much time talking about this commander that we'll probably never see play. I'm going to give it a 2.5.
I'm going to give it a 2.
2, okay, yeah.
0.5.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to talk about it a lot because I put a lot of time into it, and it's not going to ever see play anywhere outside of this, but
it did seem like it was something. It seemed like it was almost something. We were watching, and it did seem you were doing some stuff.
The thought's there, but I can't figure out how to go off before turn 4.
Yeah, there might be some dots that need connecting.
Here's another deck that needed some dots connected. Anti-Ul, Curse Wretch. 1, a black, a red, and a green for a 4-4 legendary goblin warlock with ward, blight 2, which means that to blight 2, a player puts 2 -1/-1 counters on a creature they control. Whenever 1 or more -1/-1 counters are put on a creature, draw a card if you control that creature, and if you don't control it, its controller loses 1 life.
You found some crazy combo with a 7 drop?
I didn't. Some people on Reddit already knew them.
Okay.
And I just knew to put them in the deck.
You found the people on Reddit to put it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of archaeological digging that I did for this. Quill Spike is a card that for a hybrid green or black mana, you can remove a -1/-1 counter from a creature to give it +3/+3.
Okay.
Who cares about that, right? What you're actually doing is comboing that with Devoted Druid so that you can use the green mana Devoted Druid makes to pay for the Quill Spike when you go to put a -1/-1 counter on it to untap it.
Okay.
And that essentially lets you draw your whole deck with Anti-Ul in play.
Do you still net mana this way?
No, because you have to use that green mana onto the Quill Spike to remove the thing.
Okay, so it just draws your deck. But that's when you draw your deck, you can play fast mana and then win.
And you're still going to win. Yeah.
Your Devoted Druid needs to be able to tap.
Unsummoning sick.
It can't be sick. How much is the Quill Spike mana-wise?
3 mana.
Okay, so it's like your commander, which is 4, and then plus 5-ish mana left.
Basically.
And then there's another combo?
There's another one. Yeah, this is my favorite one. There's a card called Grim Poppet.
That's the card I was thinking about.
That nobody has ever heard of before. This is a 7 mana Scarecrow that's a 4-4 that enters the battlefield with 3 -1/-1 counters on it, but you can remove a counter to put a counter on any other creature.
Okay, so it's like a weird backwards walking ballista.
It's
almost
a really bad Triskelion.
Yeah, it's a backwards Triskelion.
Really
it is.
Okay, Marvin the Mimic, or like any Twin Flame effect, really, to make a copy of it, will go infinite with -1/-1 counters on each other. Because if you have Marvin in play, all you have to do is just remove one counter to put on Marvin. And then that way, with Anti-Ul, that'll make you draw a card. And now Marvin can remove that counter and put it back on Grim Poppet.
Okay. This is almost something.
This is, again, a way to draw your whole deck.
Yeah.
But instead, it's 9 mana. But it at least, like, lets you also play the dual caster combo.
It's 9 mana plus your 4 mana commander.
Oh, yeah. So it's...
Okay. It's really like a 13
it's
mana.
It's really more like 13, yeah.
Which is fine, though. It's just say wins with 14 mana and a lot less sometimes.
So this is the new best deck in CEDH. New 5th best deck in CEDH, I think. I don't think this deck is going to go anywhere.
The commanders we found from this set were not designed for CEDH, which is realistically great because that's okay. We don't need that to be the case. So the decks that we did use, they stretch a little bit.
It's fun that they make like casual commanders that have combo potential in them like this and like make your Quill Spikes that you have like in your bulk boxes worth actually sorting through.
I love that. I think that's super cool. That was one of my favorite parts about Magic is that when new cards get printed, it can make old cards good again. I think that's so fun. So I love that this card exists. I think it's fun. It's kind of like a weird Yawgmoth in your command zone, but in Jun colors. There's probably a lot of other weird things that you could make this deck a very strong bracket 4 commander. But realistically, I don't think it'll make it in CDH.
It's really the blight of my brain right now. So wonderful. Let's move on.
I'm going to give it a 2 and move past it. Have you been keeping track of any of these?
I'm going to give it a 1. No, I haven't.
Okay. Cubby will do the math.
Yeah, Cubby's doing the math. The next card the next card is Bridget Clackland's Heart.
Sure.
2 and a white for a 3/2 legendary Kithkin warrior that when it enters or transforms into Bridget Clackland's Heart, create a 1/1 green and white Kithkin creature token. And at the beginning of your first main phase, you can pay green. And if you do, you transform her into Bridget Downs Mind, which is a legendary. It's the same thing, right? But this time it taps to add X green or add X white, where X is the number of other creatures you control. And at the beginning of your first main phase, you may pay white. And if you do, transform Bridget.
I think this card's sweet.
This card is deceptively strong.
It's kind of weird. It sits in a very strange spot. So right off the bat, a couple of things that are super huge. It's Gaia's Cradle in the command zone. If you want to be playing Selesnya and you want Gaia's Cradle in the command zone, that's what this is. Notably, it's not exactly Gaia's Cradle because it's other creatures. So it doesn't count itself. It does make a token when it enters. So it's sort of like the same thing.
Basically itself.
And it also makes 2 creatures for your actual Gaia's Cradle, which is also very nice because now you have 2 of them. It's Gaia's Cradle specifically on a creature, which can be kind of relevant for other things that untap creatures like Scrib Rangers and Quirion Ranger, I think.
I bet.
The Rangers that bounce a forest to untap a creature, that's really good when you're...
Sort of the Rangers that search for 1/1s from your deck.
Right, not the Ranger Captain of Eos. You know, they're on screen. You know what I'm talking about. I think that's kind of relevant. In the command zone, it's kind of neat and similar to stuff like Silvala. Except Silvala has a little bit of card draw, but this one has white, which means that you get to play things like the new Flash, which untaps a creature when it enters.
Ooh.
And what's the 3-mana one?
Village Bellringer?
Cool. Village Bellringer is crazy in this deck because you untap all of your creatures, including your commander. I played this one for the gameplay one. Spoiler alert, it didn't play well, but it did make some game actions at the end of one of the games. No spoilers, whatever. It has the potential to be kind of neat as a commander. I don't know where it sits in CDH because as a commander, I don't think it's there. It could be. I mean, those type of mono green and green white decks that just like tap over and over again kind of exist. There's the green white Silvala that also does something similar by making a bunch of mana. The Silvala's draw cards. This card doesn't draw cards. So
yeah.
Not having card draw in your command zone kind of sucks. And if you're a Gaia's Cradle's deck, the thing that makes the Gaia's Cradle deck good is normally Thrasios. Eventually you just turn all that mana into card draw, which this deck doesn't really have. The best thing that you're doing as the commander is just like, eventually here's another green tutor and I'll find something that allows me to go infinite or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like it's better in the 99 of a couple decks,
yeah.
It's going to end up actually being in the command zone, which probably means it's going to get a higher rating than a lot of the other commanders that we played on the show.
Yeah, I'm still mixed on it because in the 99, on paper, I think for decks like Yoshimaru, Thrasios, and Sisse, I think it makes a lot of sense because both of those decks already want to get Gaia's Cradle out early. For Yoshimaru, Thrasios, it's just in your colors. You're already playing green and white, and it's just like another way to get a Gaia's Cradle, but...
And make 2 bodies,
and make
too,
two
for
bodies.
The Gaia's Cradle. Like you already said,
right.
This is still good.
But it is still a bad rate for that deck. Normally, everything else in that deck, the only thing that's a 3-mana Gaia's Cradle is Growing Rites of Idlamok, which turns into Gaia's Cradle normally on your end step right away.
Oh, but
and
this
replaces
does the
itself.
Same thing, because this makes a body, which Growing Rites does.
Technically, yes, except for Growing Rites can flip on your end step. This has to wait until the next turn.
Oh, that's true.
That's the big thing.
That's true.
So I don't know if it'll be just a little bit too slow. I think for Sisse, it's going to end up being too slow. I don't think I would ever search for this, because I would just rather search for Gaia's Cradle normally. I think it would just be easier to tutor for and
or like
better.
Silvala
or Silvala
point.
Or
yeah.
Something like that. But it is like, it's what Sisse wants to be doing. It's a legendary creature that makes a bunch of mana. So
but
I don't
it
know.
Only makes the mana of one color.
So you need the Agatha Soul Cauldron in Sisse to make that actually good.
Which you do with Gaia's Cradle too. But like again in Sisse, you have Silvala.
Right.
You
exactly.
have regular
you have
green Silvala that you can do. Yeah,
if I can find a 3-drop, I can probably win the game in some other way.
That's the other thing.
Whereas
yeah.
in Yoshimaru Thrasios, I think this could be a fine thing to do in that type of deck, to just get like another cradle and just like another way to go. So I don't know. It feels
you
close.
Know they should we be
what do you
where
got?
Is this versus like Circle of Dreams Druid?
Yes, because Circle of Dreams Druid is the there, we already have Gaia's Cradle on a creature.
I mean, it's way easier to cast.
This one is way easier. Yeah, Bridget's way easier to cast. This one gives you 2 bodies instead of 1. This one has the option to tap for a bunch of white mana.
This
which
doesn't die to Bowmaster.
This doesn't die. Does the other one is the other one a 1 toughness?
I think it's a 2/1.
No, can we double check that? If that's
I
a
bet.
2/1, that card sucks ass. But this one, it has 3 toughness, I think.
Circle of Dreams Druid
Circle
is a 2/1.
Is a 2/1. Oh, that's terrible. What a backbreaking experience if you cast that and then it gets hit by Bowmaster. I mean, if Bowmaster is out and you are playing Rogthrass, you're kind of already fucked. But that one in particular seems bad.
Or in a Yoshi Thrass, too,
yeah.
I feel like you're also fucked. Bridge is a 3/2, so like at least you have a little bit of
a 3/2.
Buffer.
It's 2/2.
Both sides are 3-2. Okay, which is still more than one.
The white mana. The ability to make white mana is a little bit different, though. Specifically in Yoshimaru Thrasios, I found there was a couple times where I want to be playing cards like Emil and Ranger Captain of Vios, and you want that extra white pips, and it can be hard to get when your guy's cradle thing is your main thing. I don't know. I think this could be an option. It also, it's a legend, so it evolves your Yoshimaru. That's nothing, but it does make your Yoshimaru one bigger, I guess. Does this go in other decks? Does... We're bringing up Taim always way too much.
No,
I don't know.
Taim doesn't want this.
It's a 3-mana permanent. They love Gaia's Cradle. I don't know.
No, they need things that go in their deck.
Yeah.
Taim feels like a combo deck now to me.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be making
counters.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going to be helpful.
But I think this card is interesting. I think that it is a more powerful version of the Circle of Dreams Druid.
I'm going to give it a 3.2.
Oh, that might have been higher than what I would have given it. I know. You know what? 3.2 sounds right. I think we're matching up today. 3.2.
I think it's the best card we talked about today. So far.
I think it's going to surprise people. I think on paper, you're going to read this card as a 3-mana do nothing. And when you play it, I think it's going to make you 7-mana a turn. You're going to go, oh, okay, wait, this is actually kind of good. I think this one might be something.
Let's move on to the first of the elemental incarnations that we're going to be talking about today. This is Deceit. Mm. This is 4/2 Dimir hybrid for a creature elemental incarnation that's a 5/5. You're never going to cast it for that. You're always going to evoke it for 2 Dimir hybrid. And whenever it enters, if blue was spent to cast it, you're going to return up to 1 other target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. But if black was spent to cast it, target opponent reveals their hand and you choose a non-land card from it and that player discards that card.
I don't know if this is CDH playable. I thought of it for Yuriko. It's a high mana value bounce spell. Check for some counter magic if you want to use it in backup mode or something if the game is like that. I don't know.
Honestly, all these seem okay because like at least half of them is removal.
They're flexible. Maybe Yuriko, I'll give it like a 2.9.
I'll give it a 2.5 only because it can pitch to Force of Will and can go under a Chrome Mox really well.
It can pitch to Grief. It can pitch to Force of Despair. I think sometimes Yuriko plays Force of Despair.
Actually, yeah.
Interesting.
Being a hybrid card could be good for
honestly,
that.
Honestly, going under Chrome Mox is the best thing this card's
done. You know what? It gets a 2. I'm giving it a 2 now. Yeah. Formidable Speaker is actually a good card. Yeah. Here we go. Woohoo! This is why everyone's here finally. This is 2 green for a creature elf druid that says when it enters, you may discard a card. And if you do, you search your library for a creature, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And for 1 in tapping it, you can untap another target permanent and you get a 2/4 out of this whole deal.
This is exactly what green wants to be doing in CDH.
That green wants.
It untaps a Gaia's Cradle, it goes and finds you a creature that will probably untap a Gaia's Cradle or win you the game or do something powerful.
It's
extremely flexible. I think it goes in, I don't want to say every green deck. I'm not playing it in Sisse. You know, there's certainly decks that aren't going to play it, but if you're playing Cradle, you're even trying it in an Itali, right?
I mean, this turns any card in my hand into Treasonous Ogre, and there's a lot of hands that will let me go turn 1 this, turn 2 Treasonous Ogre.
And that's a good start. That's fine enough, right?
I'm finally trying Imperial Recruiter for the same thing, and this is just an upgraded Imperial Recruiter in my mind.
And the fact that you on turn 1 play this to get the Treasonous Ogre, turn 2 play the Cho'Gath to activate this to untap somebody else's Mana Vault or something that you get to cast with it. So if you're getting shit from other people, you can untap the One Ring or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you can use that.
This
is
the time then too where like if someone goes, oh man, if only I had a mana, I could interact with the win condition, and you go, say no more, fam, I got you.
You can untap an opponent's permanent.
Yeah, and then that way like they have the opportunity to interact with someone, and you go, I kind of got you on that.
That's going
to
be very relevant, I feel.
This is basically like another version of Survival of the Fittest for the Thrasios Timna decks too that are trying to put, like,
it's a one shot.
Yeah, but like if you have Devoted Druid in your hand, you get to dump Devoted Druid and then use that to find the squirrel.
His name is...
We don't care about Thrasios Timna so much anymore that we don't even remember Hazel's Brewmaster anymore. So then that way, like, it's almost a one card combo, but it's not.
You need a second card, but just one to discard.
It has to be Devoted Druid in order to set it up specifically.
Yeah, it has to be Devoted Druid.
I think that every single Thrasios deck is going to want something like this too. Again, it adds to your... I mean, we've been talking about Gaia's Cradle all day. We can talk about it till we're blue in the face.
It goes in Thrasios decks. I think it goes in Kinnan decks, right? Does Kinnan want this?
I can't imagine Kinnan doesn't want
untapping
this.
Untapping a permanent seems good. Finding a creature seems good.
Because, like, this even in Kinnan fixes your mana. So, like, if you have, like, a ton of Gaia's Cradle mana that you can make, but you can't activate Kinnan because you ran out of blue, this is now 1 mana to untap a blue source.
Yeah.
Which is now 2 Kinnan activations that you just pulled out of your asshole.
Yeah. I love that you don't have to discard a creature card. You discard any card.
Any card.
Any card at all.
Any card.
A Mox Diamond, something that's not going to do anything, discard whatever to go find any creature. I think it's going to be super relevant.
It's a you may discard a card if you do situation.
Oh, okay. So how
so
does
if
does it work? If they flash an Oppo in response to the trigger, can you choose to not discard a card?
Then I choose not to discard a card. The same way that you choose then not to search with Ranger Captain of Aeos.
So it's not like a cost or anything. That's part of the ability is
discarding
a card. Correct.
Yeah, you are always protected from opposition agent.
Yeah. How big is this card? What is
it's a 2/4, which is also like, goddamn. Okay, every single green and a 2 creature that they print has to be a 2/4.
And what about the card types? Whatever its creature types?
Elf, Druid, two great things.
Elf might be relevant. Not really.
It
but
never
elf,
is. You know when it will be? When Cavern of Souls like really helps you in a scenario,
it might
I bet. But I bet whatever you want to cast after this is really what you're concerned about resolving. You should name Ogre instead, or Shaman, probably.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm going to give this one like a 4.8 or something, right? This goes in like almost every green deck.
I was probably thinking 4.5, but I think you're probably right because like...
I'm not going to play it in Sisse. I don't think it goes in Sisse. I could be wrong about that, dude. I don't know.
Other than Thrasios and Kinnan decks, like what else is green? And we know that it's going into Tali.
I don't know why we're thinking of the same two fucking decks.
Dude, we got to play more decks.
We talked about Tali. What are other green decks? The Yoshimar Thrasios decks. All the Thrasios decks.
Yeah. Green isn't great in CEDH in general. Thrasios. But this is like helping get it back to where it needs to be. But you're right. Green is Thrasios. All this did was just make Thrasios decks continue to be the best green decks in CEDH.
I'm trying to think of other decks. I'm thinking of Magda. I'm thinking of Kefka. I'm thinking about all the Malcolm decks. I'm thinking about...
We'll move past it.
4.7-ish or 6-ish. There it is.
Cubby told you the right answer.
One of the best ones so far. Next.
Thank you, Cubby. Oh my God, dude.
Heaters?
Two heaters right in a row. Thank you, alphabetical order. Hexene Squelcher.
This is the card.
You can all finally put to rest your questions from last week's episode. This is one in a red for a creature goblin sorcerer that's a 2/2 that can't be countered. It has ward, pay 2 life, and spells you control can't be countered, and other creatures you control have ward, pay 2 life.
It's gonna be great. It's like a Grand Abolisher. It's like a defense grid. It's neat that it has the ward 2 life and it gives your creatures ward 2 life. Those are not the relevant parts of text on this card. Specifically, that it is uncounterable and then spells you cast are uncounterable.
It's funny
that
you mentioned that it's like Defense Grid and Grand Abolisher because while it is like those cards, I actually see most of its value coming from situations that those cards can't do.
You're probably right.
Protected things at instant speed and having your counter spells, which are relevant now because of this card still, be uncounterable.
Yeah, if you go Born Upon the Wind on somebody else's turn and you flash in this card, all of a sudden now your win is uncounterable in instant speed. Whereas Grand Abolisher and Defense Grid and all those other cards, they're like your turn effects. That's what they say. No one can touch you on your turn. This doesn't say anything about your turn. This is at any point in the game, your spells are uncounterable. That means not only is your win condition uncounterable, but also your counter spells are uncounterable. So if they have a bounce spell for your Hexing Squelcher, your counter spells to protect your Hexing Squelcher are uncounterable. That's really good. I also want to talk about stuff like Vexing Bobble that says whenever someone casts a spell for 0 mana or whatever, counter that spell. Now with your cards with Hexing Squelcher out, you can now cast Chromox into your own Vexing Bobble and your Hexing Squelcher will say your Chromox cannot be countered, so you can cast it right through the Vexing Bobble.
So not only can you protect your Atali, even if they have the most annoying thing that they could have for Atali, you can still completely get around it.
Right, and like, yes, how often are you going to have those two things together? But I think it's neat that if you have Vexing Bobble and a Hexing Squelcher out, you can still go through your Underworld Breach lines with Lion's Eye Diamond over and over again.
Oh, so even if it's not being used against you, you can still use it to your advantage
then too. Yeah, exactly. It works well with other protective pieces that you have, which is really nice.
Which is also why like I kind of like it with Grand Abolisher. Yeah. It's like you can have Grand Abolisher or like Voice of Victory probably more likely is one that stays in play like maybe a couple turn cycles, but like the voice allows you to make sure that you can win on your turn, and this is what like allows you to make sure that you're not losing on someone else's turn.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of chatter about this being a good card for turbo decks, and although that is like probably true, I'm not really going to dispute that. Realistically, I don't think it's as broken in turbo decks as you think, because if you have to spend 2 mana ahead of time to cast this card, that means that you might have a harder time winning as early as you otherwise could. Realistically, turbo decks, they only need a certain amount of mana. Atali needs 7 mana. If you see 7 mana in your hand, it might be unlikely that you're going to try to cast Hexing Squelcher and then wait a turn. It's just better to just cast the Atali right now,
right? I would
always
rather pitch this to the Lion's Eye Diamond
and
get Atali out earlier.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, yes, it will be good in some turbo situations, but in some turbo situations, it'll be actively bad and won't be good.
I think if you're not on defense grid, you don't want this because this doesn't protect you from like, how many times has someone gone, oh, I have a bounce spell and a counter spell. Like we can collude and like get this Drenith Magistrate dealt with because I have Odawara. And this gets around even more than Chain of Vapor still like allows you to get your spells countered again.
Yeah, I completely agree. But this card is just nonetheless, it's going to be so powerful.
It is
going
to be very powerful. Yeah,
And I love it. I think it's great. What I think it's going to do for the format is going to allow for people to push for wins more often, which I think is overall a good thing. When the other side of the coin is specifically for tournaments and how we see CDH, there's more draws. If you don't have ways to force through a win, there's just going to be more draws. It's more powerful if you are ahead in turn order, so it does give like more advantage to seed one and shit like that. I think that's okay. If it's draws or people winning the game more often, I would like people to be able to win the game more often.
Like you're saying, I think this will help people win the game because right. So much of your time is spent trying to figure out what your window is and how to do things protected. This is a great job of making sure you're protected. Yeah.
And while this is powerful in turbo decks, like we just said, I think where it's actually more powerful is like mid-range decks.
Honestly, I think I have to agree with
this
that
is like
too.
A better blue farm card than any other card, right? Like blue farm loves this card so much because this is allows you to get out of that mid-range hell situation. They're gonna have stuff. Hullbreaker Horror is a card that could still bounce your spells.
Into the Flood Maw in particular, I think is gonna get you with this because it only gives other creatures ward paid 2 life. So there's not even a scenario.
It has ward 2 life. Well, it does, but ward 2
like,
life is nothing.
If you can resolve the Underworld Breach, but like if you go Lion's Eye Diamond and are like in a spot where you're like out of mana and you need to crack it, at that moment someone can still bounce your Underworld Breach and go, ah, shoot. Right. Yeah.
That is true. They can still cast spells. They can still do things.
That's the
hopefully
thing, yeah.
Your counter spell for the Into the Flood Maw will be uncounterable.
That's the other
that
thing.
Will be
yeah,
good,
exactly.
Right? There's interaction pieces. They can still touch the spirit realm. They can still channel stuff. They can still pinpoint removal.
But again, I think that goes to show that it'll be better in a mid-range deck that's ready to win with protection like this versus like a turbo deck that even if you're trying to like turbo breach like that, I think the turbo decks are going to have less opportunities to protect what they're doing and just fully relying on Hexene Squelcher as opposed to like also having the card advantage to have backup.
This works well with Thassa's Oracle because like who cares if they can target your something with spot removal anymore? All you care about is resolving 2 spells. In decks that this actively protects your combo through and through, it's even better because like you said, for Breach, if they can still destroy the Breach, not so good. But if you go for Thoracle Line, there's nothing they can do. There's nothing in the world that they could do. So.
Yeah, so you're going to get a lot of times where people are just like looking at hands full of counter spells and going like, well, I was only prepared with counter spells. I don't have any other kinds of interaction. So Thassa's Oracle's great.
I don't know if this is going to actively change the way that people build decks or the format in any way. It's a powerful card, but I don't know that it'll actually do that.
It'll make bounce spells see a little bit more play, but I don't think it'll warp the format in a given way.
No, if anything, I do think it makes blue farm a little bit better, and I wonder if something like Subtlety could ever be playable, something that stops a creature spell that doesn't actually counter. I don't know, but it's a free piece of interaction. Sometimes I think about Subtlety, and I wonder, maybe now's the time for Subtlety?
Mindbreak Trap also does the same thing, where it doesn't counter, and Silence is also a card, too. I feel like one of the better ways to stop someone from going off if you don't have a counter spell is just Silence. Right. And they can counter anything you could do, but...
Now they mental misstep uncounterably for your Silence. Yeah,
that is gross.
It's going to be really good, without a doubt. It's going to be a powerful card. And we even talk about, like, what Turbo wants to do a lot of the time, but sometimes are too chicken to, is, like, turn 1 defense grid, turn 2 go for a win. I see that play pattern a lot from turbo decks. Now if you go turn 1 Hexing Squelcher, there's like no risk that you give the game to another turbo player or anything like that. Their spells can still be countered.
That's
and then it
true.
Gets back to you and then you get to go for a win. So like I think that aspect of it is also going to be really
good. I think so too. Yeah, better play patterns for these turbo decks. I can still really use it so that even though they might not have like the extra backup as frequently, they don't need it. They're still trying to win at a time where no one can interact.
This is a very small thing. I could talk about little tiny things forever with this card. This is a red creature, so in Rock'sai, I could see a situation where I resolve an Underworld Breach and then I want a Flare of Duplication this guy to do something else because I've used the Hexing Squelcher to resolve a defense grid. Now the defense grid's here, I can Flare of Duplication the Hexing Squelcher, and you know what I mean? Like there's gonna be stuff where like I use this protection piece to resolve that protection piece, and now I can go use this Hexing Squelcher to get rid of it to go get some more value.
Great,
or something.
Food chain's in play. Now I can exile it to food chain and cast my next Atali.
Exactly. Something like that. So I think this card is gonna be great. It's gonna be super powerful. 5 out of 5 is hard. 5 out of 5 going in every deck is kind of unrealistic, but I think this is another one. This is like a 4.9 for me.
Like, does Magda play this card?
See, I don't think so.
Because Magda doesn't care about uncounterability. Yeah. The ward doesn't necessarily matter to Magda. It doesn't like help its game plan at all.
I'm not going to play this in Sisse. There's a couple other strategies where this won't be relevant, but I
can't give this a 5.
Not a 5, but I think it is like a 4.9, 4.8. I do think it's going to be like, if you're in like a regular CDH deck, this card goes in. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you're in a weirdo deck like Magda or a weirdo deck like Sisse where like you need hyper-specific shit, that's a different story. But if you're in just like a CEDH deck and you're playing red, this has got to be near the top of your list, I would imagine.
Yeah, right? Like if I'm building a new CEDH commander that's red and I don't know what I'm doing with it, after I put the fast mana in, this is going in.
We got fast mana, we got the win conditions. Okay, the protections go in next.
I think I'm going to go 4.6 so that that way we have no idea which is better, this card or Formidable Speaker. It's we're not going to know. You're all going to know, but we won't know.
There's definitely more hype around the Hexing Squelcher, but I think Formidable Speaker.
Formidable Speaker is going to do more powerful things because its ceiling is higher in theory because of the amount of choices that you get from it. Whereas, like, this is going to do the same thing. It's going to be predictable. This is, in theory, the scariest card because people now need to figure out how to stop other players.
Go faster than it. That's what you do.
Yeah, you go faster.
You don't Hexing Squelcher in your own deck so that you can go faster.
Right, yeah.
Bad advice from player.
You don't want to go for a protected turn two. You want to go for turn one.
I want to go for turn one now. Yeah. Just wait. In 5 years, we're going to be talking about the turn zero.
The turn zero is going to be so easy.
Dude, the format's too fast. You have to go for turn zero. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to lose.
Once we get all the spirit guides, y'all are doomed. Yeah.
Maryland Fey Ascendant is two, a black, a green, and a blue for a 4/5 legendary fairy elf noble with flying. And whenever it or another elf or fairy you control enters, you exile the top two cards of target opponent's library. And once each turn, you may cast a spell with mana value less than or equal to the number of elves and fairies you control from among cards exiled with Maryland this turn without paying its mana cost.
This is a Sultai commander with the ability to win with Food Chain and has roughly some card advantage in it.
So obviously we played it on the show.
I would like to talk about it no more.
Great.
I just said everything that there is about it, I think.
I'm going to give it a 2 because it's realistically never going to see play and it's worse than the other bug Food Chain options that we have already.
Is it better than Ukuma Food? It might be better than it because it doesn't need anything else. It just exiles the opponent's library and then that's a win con?
Exile the top two cards of target opponent's library.
Over and over?
Ukuma gets around the One Ring. Yeah, because it loses life instead.
Then
does it? Wait, does it though?
I don't know. I think this actually might quietly be the best Sultai Food Chain option, which I don't think that's an actual a real award one should be proud of. But
oh no, it still deals damage to target player. Yeah. I don't like that it gives your opponent the chance to win on their upkeep though. In theory.
You can cast stuff in between.
If you have enough elves or fairies to be able to get their things. You can cast all their
one drops. That should be good, right? You should be able to win with only one drops, right?
I guess, yeah. Like you like one drops
eventually you get an Imperial Seal.
And then do what with the Imperial Seal? Oracle.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if you get to cast all their one drops, it's only opponents, not even yours.
Cannot choose you. So it's not even like you can go through and find like your Finhorn elves and your Llanowar elves.
The timing would be awkward. You'd have to convince them like, no, eventually I'll just find like your Imperial Seal and then I'll get stuff from my library that
I'm playing Bug Food Chain. I don't want to be casting my commander. I don't think my goal at any point
is cast but my commander. That's how you win the game at the end. How do you convince the table that if they're like, I can win in my upkeep, how do you still kill them? There's got to be something.
That's why I don't think this is the best one because there's so many other ones that do that same thing. Okay. Like all the other ones that
we've already talked about it way too
with
much.
Red, it's a two. Bug Food Chain doesn't see play. Moonshadow is a black mana for a creature elemental that's a 7/7. Something else has got to be on this. It's got menace and this creature enters with 6/-1/-1 counters on it. And whenever one or more permanent cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, while this creature has a -1/-1 counter on it, remove a -1/-1 counter on it from this creature.
This has got to be a time card. 6 counters on a one drop? I think they play the little bank boy because he's a one drop that makes 3 counters.
Yeah, but dude, in time, it's if you don't have 6 mana for it right away, it's still only 3 counters. Because then, whenever one or more permanent cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere while this has it's only one counter that you remove. Either way though, it's still effectively 4 counters.
Okay.
Because when you activate Taim, you mill over stuff, and then this is going to trigger and say, you have to remove another counter because a permanent hit my graveyard.
Okay, that's true. Can you like stack them though? Can you just like do 2 activations, remove 3 counters, remove 3 counters?
That you can. You just need 6 mana
to start. So maybe
to start.
I don't know enough about Taim, but I gotta assume a one drop that has the potential to add 6 counters on your thing, Taim players gotta be looking at, right?
You gotta be looking.
Do I not understand this deck at all? Someone let me know. This might be the final time I talk about Taim ever.
So this is a 2 then.
This is a 2 because it goes in one deck. There's no way it goes anywhere else besides that. I think that's all that it offers, but I don't think we have another effect that for one mana gives you 6 counters. I don't think that effect on a permanent exists.
I saw something about this card being busted in like Dredge or like a reanimator deck.
Why do you do it there? What do you do?
I don't know.
What do you do with that?
Shut up, Cameron. Let's move past
it. It's kind of neat with Abigail because Abigail can remove its tech box and then it's just a, but then how do you get rid of the minus minus one counters.
So it just dies to state-based actions?
That's bad. That's bad. Never mind. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the next card.
Tam, Mindful First Year, is one and a Simic hybrid for a 2-2 legendary Gorgon wizard that says each other creature you control has hexproof from each of its colors. And you can tap it to have target creature you control become all colors until the end of turn. This is the best version of this effect Sisay has seen, by far.
I think this is a Sisay card. Again, irrelevant parts. This is a 2-mana creature that offers you 2 colors of permanence on a legendary object. That's really good.
But also gives you protection, like in a way that you played Skrelv and you played K9 for.
Yeah, I still play Skrelv. I don't play K9. It's similar to Pippin because it's a 2-mana version of that effect.
Oh, and Pippin was bad.
Pippin was kind of bad. And this one naturally gives Sisay protection from Swords to Plowshares already, which, whatever.
That is good. That is most of the targeted removal that you're going to see.
Down spells.
Yeah, you're right.
But
this
is also easy to cast, being a generic and then a hybrid blue or green. That is helpful for Sisay to have something that's easy to cast. It's a little bit slow, but it is going to very much feel like an untap and you win the game. Can he give himself all colors?
Target creature you control.
So technically, you can just give himself all colors, and then Sisay immediately has +5/+5. Even if you don't have another legend to give it whatever, I think that will make it easy to win the game.
Yeah,
it'll specifically
that's
true. Be really good with Bloom Tender, obviously, because it'll just turn your Bloom Tender on right away and allow you to go for it. But you'll need to like untap with this and Bloom Tender. I mean, there's other things that give haste. There's like Tyum, and there's things that you can do like grant haste to a creature or whatever.
But you can like win off of a very small board, basically.
Yeah, I think it's like with Flash, where it's just like it gives you a little bit more extra help, and it gives you a little bit like redundancy. It'll help you net more mana quickly, which will allow you to like at some point like double tutor. And I think those parts in Sisay are interesting because normally when you go through the Sisay lines, people kind of start to rat on themselves. They talk to the table about what interaction they have, and someone will say, I gotta wait. I wanna wait for him to target here or whatever. And then you can get to a stage easier with this, whereas if your Bloom Tender is on early, you could get to a spot where you do 2 tutors or something like that. You have extra mana, and then all of a sudden you go find Teferi and their window closes. The fact that it's also just like onboard protection, it does a lot of things for Sisay. I'm excited about this card. I think it's gonna be good.
I think this is gonna be one of the better Sisay cards that we've seen pretty recently. I feel like what happens with Sisay, from what I hear, is that you just keep swapping out cards from the same spots because nothing's good and we don't know what they are. I think this might like solidly take up one of the spots, and now you go, I only have 2 flex slots now all of a sudden.
Yeah, so I'm gonna give it, it's still like a 3-ish though. It only goes in Sisay, but I think it's gonna be strong. I don't know, like a 3.4 or something.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a solid 3 because I can't find another home in it.
No other home.
I think it's gonna be very, very good in that home that it has though.
Yeah, definitely.
Vibrance is next.
Good card.
This is a good card. This is 3 and 2 Gruul hybrid for a creature elemental incarnation that's a 4/4. You can also evoke it for 2 green and red hybrid. And when this creature enters, if red was spent to cast it, it deals 3 damage to any target. And if green was spent to cast it, you can search your library for a land, reveal it, and put it into your hand, shuffle, and gain 2 life.
This card's good. I think this card's good.
I didn't realize this was land. It was just like land anyway, on it.
It kind of reads like dog shit at first, but I think
that's
realistically,
it's a dog.
It's a Sylvan Scrying. It is a 2-mana effect that goes and finds a Gaia's Cradle. That's the floor of what it is. Green, go find Gaia's Cradle, play it as your land for turn. That's good. The fact that it is also flexibly when you need it to be a lightning bolt to just get rid of something that's on the boards that's stopping you from going, that will be relevant. And the fact that it is a green creature that you can search for will also be kind of relevant. Now, it's not good with stuff like Green Sun Zenith, but it is good with stuff like Summoner's Pact because you still have to cast it to get the effect of what it is.
Yeah, which is why it's not going in Atali.
Right, yeah. It's a bad Atali flip. It's just nothing off of
Atali. It's just straight that's nothing.
But if you are specifically Rogthras, I think this card is considerable because it's 2-mana to go find Gaia's Cradle. And then sometimes it'll have other texts. Sometimes it'll do other things. But I think just that rate, 2-mana, I said this 100 times just now, 2-mana to find Gaia's Cradle, I think that rate is good enough to play in Gaia's Cradle decks. So I think this card's going to be good.
This is also kind of reminiscent of Sowing Mycospawn for the same reason, where like Sowing Mycospawn's a 4-mana creature that you cast because it can basically pay for itself. With the Cradle, you're going to find the same thing with this, except like it has to resolve, but it's a creature.
Right, and the nice thing about these Rogrok Thrasios decks is they have like multiple land targets. Like if you already have the Gaia's Cradle, you can go get Deserted Temple, which can untap a Gaia's Cradle.
Or Manamo,
Manamo that can untap a Gaia's Cradle. Like there's always like another Gaia's Cradle that you can go get, and that's all that this deck wants is like more ways to find and activate and abuse Gaia's Cradle over and over again. I think this one's good. It's flexible. It does what you need. It's also removal. It allows you to go both ways. It allows you to find your combo piece and also be removal when you need it to be. So great card. I think like a 4. I don't know. I think it's going to go in a couple decks.
I was going to say 3.7, but I think maybe I'm going to say 3.8 instead, because I think you're probably right. right. It's going to go in more decks than I think that it will.
I could see an argument for this only goes in Rockthrash, but I think like other red-green decks that want to find Gaia's Cradle, as they pop up and come in and out of Fringe, this is going to be a go-to target for all of those decks.
It's sorcery speed, which it's is like kind of the other thing. I feel like there's a lot of similar effects that you can do at instant speed, but a lot of the land tutors happen to be sorcery speed in particular. Yeah. So having like bad removal attached to a land tutor, I think is still really good.
That flexibility is going to be helpful. And it'll be a really powerful in Fringe decks. The decks that like need a little bit of extra flexibility, I think it'll be helpful there.
Like Tanuk. So you're welcome, Tanuk.
Yeah, Tanuk gets a new toy.
Voracious Tome Skimmer is 3 Dimir hybrid for a 2/3 flying fairy rogue. And when you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, you can pay a life to draw a card.
This is kind of like an effect from the CDH of old, Breaching Hippocamp.
Wavebreak Hippocamp is what it is.
And
one of them is a 3/2 with flash for 4 mana, and the other one is a 3 mana 2/3 that says whenever you cast your first spell of each other player's turn, you get to draw.
Right, yeah. Stuff like Vial Smasher with the Curiosity on it. This is a thing of the past, but realistically, I think this rate is a pretty good rate. 3 mana for whenever you cast a spell on an opponent's turn, draw a card, you lose a life or something?
Yeah, you pay a life to draw a card.
But it's like uncapped. You can like, so if you like Born Upon the Wind on somebody else's turn and win the game, as you're going through, you draw a card every time you cast a spell. That's crazy.
That is pretty good.
That's crazy.
What do you need all those other cards for, though?
It helps you get to the
win. Why are you borning then? Yeah. Why are you borning if you can't win?
Just for like to try to go for it. Just to try.
Just to try.
Just to wing it.
I'll find stuff. Yeah.
Cast Dark Ritual. Draw a card. That was something.
You're not wrong about that. I don't think that's the greatest strategy, but you're not wrong about that.
Since this isn't a commander, it's so hard to like build for that in like most decks. So I don't know if this will actually be good because this card...
What's the Curiosity Control deck in 2026? Yeah.
It's specifically not passive card draw, which is what it looks like at first. It looks like it's a Rhystic Study, but Rhystic Study is good because you do nothing and get a card. That's good.
No, is this going to be one of those cards, though, that like you're going to pretend like countering something that's not worth countering is still good because you're going to get the card draw out of it, though?
You will be tricked into doing so.
Yeah.
It will be a trap and you'll go, oh, I have this Force of Will. I should use it to draw a card. And then you realize, wait a minute, I went down 2 cards to counter something that didn't matter to draw 1 card.
Now I lose to the next player because I don't have something for them.
I could see an argument if you are on like Turbo Flash Enablers. If you are like your whole deck, you have geared around playing
High Fae Trickster.
And if you're on like, this is my strategy, this is what I do. I operate at instant speed. This is a powerful effect. It's a strong, whenever you cast a spell, draw a card. That's kind of crazy. So you have to meet a little requirement for that. Yeah. That's still a crazy effect.
To me, you are describing a powerful bracket four deck.
Damn it. I feel like this happens a lot.
Yeah, you're telling me about like, why are you not trying to win on someone else's turn? Why am I trying to get value from casting spells?
I win by drawing cards and see what I get. Another ritual. So I'll cast it, draw a card.
Another dark ritual.
It's like what Ral is doing. They're just like drawing more cards.
No, this is not what Ral is doing. Yeah. This is not. Ral is making everything cheaper so that you can storm through the entirety of your deck. All this is doing is like working in tandem with something else not in your command zone.
You can cast it off dark ritual.
Okay, I take everything I said back.
I don't know. Realistically, what, like a 2.8? I think it has potential.
I'm going to give it a 2. The Simon Cowell in me cannot see the potential.
If Song of Creation isn't good, this isn't good. There's also the Jeskai one, Song of Jeskai.
Whirlwind of Thought, I think.
4 mana whenever you cast a spell, draw a card, and that card sees no play.
We've been talking about not wanting to interact so much and wanting to win instead.
This one is a punishment card. It's a trick and a trap. I think it's neat and cool.
Here's another card that shouldn't be on this list, probably.
Okay.
Wistfulness. This is the last of the elemental incarnations. This is 3/2 Simic hybrid for a 6/5. When it enters, if 2 green was spent to cast it, you can exile target artifact or enchantment an opponent controls. Or if 2 blue was spent to cast it, you draw 2 cards and discard a card. And of course, you can also evoke it for 2 Simic hybrid.
It's flexible. It's removal and it's card draw.
I thought about it for Kinnan only because of the removal aspect. It's a creature that if they flip into it, it's necessarily the end of the world, but it does nothing. But at least their flip wasn't dead.
Yeah, you got a point. I don't think this one is as good as the dog. The dog feels way more flexible to me.
And it's not like, what's the channel turtle?
Colossal Sky Turtle. That card's crazy.
That's not casting a spell. This is casting a spell at sorcery speed. So Wistfulness gets a 1.
Moving on.
Here's my favorite card of the set. Kindle the Inner Flame.
Finally, an Itali card.
Finally, yeah. This is 3 in a red for a kindred sorcery elemental. Create a token that's a copy of target Itali you control. Accept it as haste and at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice this token. But you can also flash it back.
Which is crazy that it says flashback.
It says flashback.
It must be in the commander product or something. Is that why?
No, this is the main set, dude.
Does the main set have any other flashback, or are they full on this now where they can just do whatever?
They just do whatever.
They just do whatever. No one cares. Whatever.
You already have to have your phone out when you play the game anyway. So
there's one of keyword in the set. Good.
Yeah, there we go. Flashback. Everyone knows what flashback is at this point.
Yeah.
Certain keywords, I feel like, could just be loosey-goosey.
Make that evergreen. It's fine.
So for one in a red, you can flash it back while also beholding three elementals.
Which honestly is a super cool key. Like the fact that it's behold an elemental. Behold. Yeah. I think that's fun, but it's bad.
To behold an elemental, you choose an elemental you control or reveal an elemental card from your hand.
Which Atali plays how many?
One. Fury, I think, is the only one.
Which is rarely in play.
Always sacrificed, I feel like. Yeah.
Realistically, what this card is four mana to make a copy of Atali. That's what you said. It combos with Duel Caster. It's four mana Twin Flame.
It's just another Twin Flame. And the only reason why I'm excited about it is for that reason. Like another Twin Flame. And there was a game that I played recently where the only Twin Flame in my hand was the seven mana Chandra. And I was like, oh, I have only have four mana in play. Well,
this would have been good.
I know what I'm cutting. Here we go.
There is like a dream world where like you're playing Atali. You could flip into other people's elementals.
I was thinking about that.
It could happen. It's not going to. Don't plan for that. It's not going to.
Because I also like for that Ashling deck had to look up every single elemental in the format, and there's not many. No one's playing any of them that are going to stick and play. Yeah.
But I think that you're right that in Atali specifically, four mana for Atali is just like, that's still fine. You already play one, except the other one already has regular flashback.
Three mana and then four to flash it back for regularly. But I'm also on Eldrazi Confluence, which is also arguably a four mana Atali that does two other things.
Yeah.
But that one gets fucked up if you have a token copy of Atali in play.
Are there other Twin Flames that you're not playing?
I'm on every Twin Flame right now.
Is there like a five mana Twin Flame or a six mana Twin Flame?
Not that I'm aware of.
They're all in the three mana or less.
I feel like we would have put a five or six mana Twin Flame in before we decided that Chandra was good.
Would you play five mana Twin Flame?
Maybe, right? five mana Twin Flame obviously is going to do something else. Like, now when we get a Twin Flame that's three mana, it does so many other different things. Yeah. I'm surprised that this flashback sucks so bad.
It is kind of surprising that this one sucks. Maybe they've caught on that Atali might be good, and they're like, whoa, 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 easy with this token shit. Make them a little worse. You don't have to keep pushing this.
Whoever played Magda a couple years ago switched over to Atali a couple years ago, too, and realized, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have been printing these stupid vehicles. I should be printing more things like World War Hulk and this.
Realistically, Atali is just like built for red decks. Like everything that red wants to do, Atali just works with. I don't know. It's like the perfect
everything.
This goes in exactly one deck and maybe not in that deck. I'll give it a 3.
Actually, higher than I was going to give
it.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a 2.5.
I'm going to change my answer. You're right. 2.5.
Yeah, I think it's still like one of the worst versions of this effect that we have. But at the same time, like I'm still going to play it.
I'm going to try it.
When I flip into it, it's going to be great.
And it still wins with Duel Caster Mage.
You know what? Yeah. And if I spend 21 life on Atali with Treasonous Ogre, I can still spend another 12 life and not die and make another copy of Atali.
You couldn't do that with Chandra.
I can't do that with Chandra. No, I can't pay 21 life again.
Get that piece of shit out of there.
That's my cap. Can I do it again with Treasonous Ogre?
Next.
Mirror Form.
Oh, yeah. This one.
This one's bad.
This one's bad, but it's crazy.
It's crazy. This is 4/2 blue for an instant that says each non-land permanent you control becomes a copy of target non-aura permanent. I would like everything of mine to be a Rhystic Study, please.
Yes, dude. This is going to create nightmare situations. The only saving grace.
No one's ever going to cast it.
No one's ever going to resolve it. You're going to spend 6 mana on a card that can be countered. That's like the biggest issue is like it has no built-in protection whatsoever. Yeah. You are so blown out if you cast this and it gets countered.
Not if
your Hexing Squelcher's in play. Holy shit, dude. If you say all of my... what is it? Are they not the other permanents that they were?
Correct. Yeah, they become a copy of the non-land permanent you select.
All, right? You don't get to choose? It's all of them?
Each.
Yeah. So you have no more mana.
Each. No, all of your land stay. It's each non-land.
Holy shit, this is even better, maybe. Because I was thinking like, oh no, you lose your rocks to... Your biggest problem
then is that every single creature on the board comes sideways at you until you die, and then no one casts a spell until your life total is zero.
But I gotta imagine, anytime anyone casts a spell, it's gonna be like, I'll draw 5 cards off of my Rhystic Study.
How many of my Rhystic Studies would you like to pay for?
Maybe like the Kidin versions that are like turbo Rhystic Study decks? I mean, you already have a whole bunch of Rhystic Studies.
No, dude, you put this in like a token deck, like a Shorakai deck.
deck
that's like making all these 1/1 tokens.
Wow. Because
they don't care about it being tokens.
Oh, that's probably neat in the Shore Archive version. I don't know. 6 mana is so much. Is it a sorcery or instant?
It's an instant.
It's an instant. That's good. Or in like Marnius where you have, is this a non-token?
Non-land permanent.
Oh, gross. So all the tokens,
oh,
all
God,
the shit.
Oh, God, yeah. So like you just make like a ton of clues and treasures into Heuristic Studies.
With the Cabbage Merchant.
But now all of your other engines are off.
And they're like you Heuristic Studies. Have... They're better engines than whatever they were.
I'm saying if you don't already have something to do, people can still
it locks
target
the game
you.
Out.
No, for you, until everyone sends all their creatures at you, they make a pact and they say no one's casting a spell until we just attack this player to death and then nothing else happens.
Yeah. You have to already have some way to stop that. You have to play your commander maybe that's big.
Draw again, yeah. Or you can't have your commander in play. You then have to do this
play him after.
And then slam your commander
like,
when you untap.
And what if like in Rogthrasse, when you have like a fairy, what's the untapping fairy?
Cloud of Fairies.
Cloud of Fairy, and you're like, okay, I'm going to make 10 Cloud of Fairies.
No, they don't get the enter the battlefield trigger.
Oh, they just become.
They're already
you're right,
in
you're
play.
Right, you're
yeah,
right.
So
that's
like
not
this,
good. That's
yeah.
not good. Okay, okay. I'm trying to think like what else would it be besides just like I have 20 Heuristic Studies.
What else do you want?
What else do you want?
I wouldn't want anything else. 20 Esper Sentinels.
I can't think
I figured it out. Yeah.
No, that's bad.
Not
because then if someone casts a spell, you're forced to draw the cards so they can kill you by forcing you to draw the cards.
Oh,
don't
that's
choose
terrible.
Esper Sentinels.
Yeah, don't choose
Wanchatong.
Mystic Remora either.
No, Mystic is a May.
No, but then you go to your upkeep and you're going to pay for
it. Sacrifice all your promise. Yeah, that's bad. Don't do that.
Yeah.
It's really good with Heuristic. The more I think about the other ones, it's maybe not so good with the other ones.
This is a 2-card combo.
But it will be funny if like all my stuff is Smothering Tides. Go to your draw step. Make 900 treasures. Or that's funny. It can't be good. It's 6 mana. But it has such crazy potential.
Oh, that's so funny.
And they're still legendary. It doesn't do anything about legendary, right?
Yeah, because they're copies
of it. They just copy
it. So you
can
make all of your things a copy of your commander and then all of your things die.
Make him copy of Formidable Speaker and then go to your turn and then untap all of your shit 1,000 times. No, I don't know.
This is the funniest card we've talked about.
This is a funny card, yeah. I think realistically, I can't in good faith give it higher than like a 3. Realistically, I'm going to give like a 2 or 2 or something.
Wow,
right?
I'm going to give it a 1.5.
Yeah, 6 mana is just far too much.
This ceiling that we're talking about is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But in order
you're probably
for
right.
to pull this off.
I'm going to give it a 2 because I have faith, but you're probably right in the 1.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy, you are some kind of political genius.
If you can get this to resolve.
And not get attacked to death in like the next couple turns. Let's talk about the 2 artifacts from the set and then everyone can go home.
Yeah.
This is Firdok Core. This is a 3-mana kindred artifact shapeshifter. That's a changeling. So it's every creature type. You can tap it for a mana of any color, and for 4 mana, it becomes a 4/4 artifact creature until end of turn.
It's an artifact dwarf.
It's an artifact dwarf.
It taps for a mana.
Honestly, it is. Yeah.
So in Magda, it taps for 2 mana, basically. And also combos with Clock of Omens and is really good. Because whenever you tap it, you make a treasure with Magda out and it makes the mana still.
Oh, this is better than it reads. Yeah. You don't have to turn it into the 4/4.
You don't have to turn it into a 4/4. It's already a dwarf.
It's already a dwarf. A dwarf becomes tapped.
Magda doesn't say whenever a dwarf creature becomes tapped.
No,
it says
whenever a dwarf.
Because they already play a 3-mana artifact dwarf. And this is, I think, a little bit better because it makes the mana.
Yeah, a lot of the artifact dwarfs that they play end up being
2 mana.
Yeah, but if they're 3 mana, like they are a vehicle or
something
that does something else. And this does do something else. So.
Yeah, and it's nice as this can tap itself. You don't need a vehicle. You don't need something else to tap. You know what I mean? They can just tap for mana.
You don't have to like worry about it getting into combat or anything like that.
Exactly. If what I understand about Magda is correct, I feel like the same caveat as I have with Taim cards is I'm pretty sure this goes in Magda.
Yeah, this seems really good in Magda.
So,
yeah.
Like a 3. The next card's the same thing.
And it can still combo with your Clock of Omens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Stalactite Dagger is 2 mana for an equipment that says when it enters, you create a 1/1 colorless shapeshifter creature token with Changeling. And equipped creature tokens get +1/+1 and have all creature types.
It doesn't have Changeling, does it?
No.
Okay, so the token that it makes does and the thing that you equip it to does.
Oh, this is probably bad.
Is it bad? Is it not good? 2 mana? Because I'm thinking it's 2 mana to make an artifact dwarf.
It's 4 mana to make an artifect dwarf. But the
because
thing is,
the shapeshifter
is never
isn't
an artifact.
The thing's never an artifact.
The thing's never an artifact. This is
not
bad.
This is bad.
This is a 0.
0. Never mind.
This
sorry.
Is a 0.
Never
right?
mind.
Yeah, because the
I
creature's
know,
never an artifact.
Yeah, the creature's never an artifact. That's not good. That's not good. But the other one is good, I'm pretty sure. The other one is a dwarf and an artifact, not a creature, but that's okay. This, the thing that's relevant, is not an artifact.
Firdok Core, good.
Firdok Core, other one, bad.
Stalactite Dagger.
Was that it? We talked about all the cards?
Those are all the cards. We are now through with the set review portion of the episode.
I believe the best cards in the set are something. thing. Hexing Squelcher, Formidable Speaker.
Kindle the Inner Flames
is
the third best one.
That's the third. Bridget is also almost good.
Bridget is also
I thought we had another
good.
Number three.
Oh yeah, Kindle God. The Inner Flame. Because I said I have three cards I'm putting in a tally, and it was Formidable Speaker.
Oh, Vibrance. Vibrance, I think, is good too.
Oh, yeah, Vibrance. Okay, yeah.
I think the top three is probably something.
I think more Atali decks will play Kindle the Inner Flame than Rogthrass decks will play Vibrance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think Vibrance goes in every Rogthrass deck, no question.
I think that Kindle the Inner Flame goes in every Atali deck, no question.
I thought you gave it like a 2.5 or something.
Well, yeah, but I didn't give Vibrance that high of a score either.
Okay, fair. Yeah, I think I mentioned them. Hexing Squelcher, Formidable Speaker, Vibrance, the Atali card. Tam is pretty good for Sisay.
The third best card can be whatever anyone wants
Bridget,
it to be.
Maybe. Bridget's good.
Yeah, whatever the third best card is that you think it is, it's definitely not better than Formidable Speaker or Hexing Squelcher.
Those are the two best ones, because those are for sure going in all the CDH decks.
All the deck that yeah. want them, yeah.
Thanks so much for watching.
If you
like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Red, Finks, MTG, Wandering Around, Mike H, Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep, MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Okie Toad, Penguin Man, 0089, Eli the Magic Eye, David Newman, Johnny Denver, Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fires, Frogman, Springler, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Essie Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Things Banjo, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, The Works, 472, Gare Bear Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornar Wild, Uncle Butts, Dute Loot, Kwache, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you'd like to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thanks, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on the internet for more content.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time. The $50 patrons, we should mention them too.
Pay Me No Mind, Drew Adams, XO, Sarge MTG, Rick, Shardicus, McSaucy, Max McComber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Safarius, Ono, Frog, Ash Wayne, Vietnam 69, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary, Coulson, Dalton, Poteet, Jan Wild, Feng, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Woo-hoo.
The end. That was it.
Ding
Wizard of
dong,
Oz.
The witch is dead. Witch, old witch. The wicked witch.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.